Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Broncos country.
Broncos country.
Let's ride.
Broncos country.
Let's ride into Broncos a future country. Without let's Russell ride. Wilson. Hey, Broncos country. Let's ride. Into salary cap hell. Yes, Broncos country, you are free from the russet. However, it's going to cost you. You might be happy about this QB divorce, Broncos country. Just know it is going to be the most expensive QB divorce ever. The most expensive divorce. Consider that the most expensive QB divorce ever. It might have been cheaper just to give this guy half of the franchise. Let's run down some of the numbers. 85 mil in dead cap space. And that's just to be free of the sack of potatoes. And on top of that, they still owe him 39 mil in guarantees. They're going to pay him 39 million in the next year just to go away. So they're paying him almost 40 mil not to play quarterback. Wouldn't you think for 40 mil, you would want a guy to suit up and be under center? Not russet. They're paying him nearly 40 mil to get the hell out of town while also absorbing 85 mil in dead cap. So in the immortal words of Charlie Casserly, that's not good.
Not good.
Below not good.
Below not good.
You need some more numbers. Here they are. Denver just paid Russet 124 mil to win 11 games. That's 11.2 mil per win. They paid Russet more per win, more per single win, than Brock Purdy is going to make on his entire rookie contract. And that's before we even get into the five picks and the three players that Denver gave up to trade to give this guy all that money, including two first-round picks. And if that weren't horrifying enough, the real kicker, or should I say, the real kick in the stick, that five-year, $242 million contract that Russ signed after he was dealt to Denver was actually an extension. An extension on the two remaining years he had on his prior deal. And I'm not trying to go all math pop quiz on you clones because I know it'll stress you all out. But I'm pretty confident that you can do the math yourself and figure out exactly what that means. You know what that means? I'll help you. That means that Russ never even got to playing a single down on that five-year, $242 million extension. He didn't even get to the extension. They cut him before it even kicked in. So the Broncos threw Russet a five-year, quarter of a bill extension before he even played a down for them, and then they sawed him off before he even played a down on that extension. So, is it the worst trade in NFL history, or is it the worst contract extension in NFL history? As always, yes. In this case, it really truly might actually be both, which is why it's still incredible that GM George Payton is still the GM of that team. And look, I don't like calling for people's jobs. I'm not in the business of ripping food off somebody else's plate. I'm not calling for his job. I'm just saying I'm shocked as hell that guy still has a job. Think of it this way. They traded for the Russet with 2 years and 51 mil left on his contract. Then they wound up paying him 124 mil for those 2 years. So, in reality, and I know these numbers are starting to make your head spin, but they threw him a $73 million raise before he ever played a snap for them, just so he could win them 11 games in 2 years. And on top of that, leave them with a going-away present of 85 mil in dead cap space. So what Russ really got was a no-year $73 million extension. Hey, man, good work if you can get it. I'm no capologist. I'm no front office guru. But that seems like a really, really bad deal for the team. No matter how you look at it, no matter how you break it down, absolutely one of the most disastrous player acquisitions in the history of the sport. If not the single most disastrous. Who saw that coming? Besides Tariq Woolen. My man Tariq saw it. He saw this coming from a mile away. My dude was all over it. I have no idea what Denver's internal scouting reports on Russ look like, but I definitely know what Reek's scouting report sounded like.
Him in person, it was pretty funny because on TV and stuff, you see him like from college stuff, you like, okay, he look in shape on TV. But you see him in person, it's like weird. He like a sack of potatoes.
But you see him in person and it's like weird. He's like a sack of potatoes.
Like a sack of potatoes.
That's like an $85 million line right there. That is aging so well. That clip was an instant classic, and it gets better every single day. Now, the truth is that sack of potatoes actually did get his act together this past season. He wasn't looking so lumpy. He wasn't looking so starchy. He wasn't looking so weird. I'm sure he was acting weird, but he wasn't looking so weird. He actually was in good shape. So I've got to be fair about that. And I also want to be fair about this. Russet did not play horribly this past season. He just didn't. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he was great or awesome, but he did throw for 26 touchdowns to only 8 INTs. He did complete 66% of his passes. He had a 98.0 passer rating. He had 4 fourth quarter comebacks, which actually tied for the league lead. You know, so if you look at some of these stats, not all of them, you know, his yardage per completion was not good, below not good. But some of these stats, some of these metrics would put him in a top 10. I mean, a serviceable starting quarterback. Now, he was 7-8 in the games he started the past season. None of that's elite, but we're not talking about the second coming of the Coug Hunter here. Clearly, it wasn't just Russ's play that got him run out of Denver. Clearly, the Broncos just could not have that dude around that building anymore. At some point, between the high knees and the jumping jacks on the team plane and his own office on the second floor and his own film sessions and his own staff and the drama about the QB wristband and the weird sideline drama with Sean Payton, at some point during all of that, the Broncos decided, man, we cannot live with this. We can't have this. We can't deal with this dude anymore. And they would pay whatever it cost to be rid of him, even if that cost was $85 million in dead money and $39 million in guaranteed money. See, that's the thing. Whoever gets this guy is going to get, well, frankly, a shell of his former self, but you also get the guy. Like, his game and play aside, not everybody wants to deal with the guy either. Clearly, Sean Payton didn't. So now Russ has got to find somebody who will deal with or want or need his diminishing play, but maybe even more importantly, the guy. The guy. Because I don't know that you change the guy. And the guy's not for everybody. Now, on the other hand, if I want to try and make an argument for this, you would think that another team might look at the season he just had and the bargain that he's now available for and find it appealing. The guy's damn near going to play for free. You can get this guy on the veteran minimum. You could get this guy probably for just over a mil. Wouldn't that be attractive to somebody? You'd think so, but that's not the way it feels. Certainly not until all the other dominoes fall, because there are better options than Russet out there, and the draft is deep as hell with quarterbacks. So the question, the long way of asking the question, now what? Where does this guy end up? There is no obvious destination. Spoiler alert. You know what makes sense to me? Raiders. Sorry about that, Raider fan. Raiders. I'm not saying that's where he will end up, but if I'm looking at all the quarterback needy teams and where they're drafting, Raiders. But there is no obvious destination. And here's one more thing. How the hell is that guy going to win 2 additional rings in the next 5 years? Like he was going on about recently. Remember that? Maybe I was onto something last month when I said the only way Russ is going to get the two rings that he thinks that he has left in the tank is by going to KC and backing up Mahomes. That might be his only option to get anywhere near a Lombardi ever again.
For me, it's about winning. Over the next 5 years, I want to win too. I want to feel the chill of that trophy again.
Are you one of millions struggling with premature hair thinning and hair loss? Or maybe you're scared about inheriting that thinning look because it just runs in the family. Introducing Provia, a real solution that delivers on its promise without the harsh side effects, unwanted chemicals, and unpleasant smells. Thanks to our friends that developed GenuCell Skincare, Provia uses Procapil. It's a natural ingredient to effectively target the three main causes of premature hair thinning for men and women of any age. By supporting scalp circulation, the delivery of nourishing nutrients, and hair follicle anchoring to your scalp, Provia guarantees more hair on your head than in the shower or on your comb, or 100% of your money back. And right now, new customers can save over 50% off Provia's introductory package at proviahair.com/Rome. Every package includes a full 60-day supply of Provia serum for daily use, plus their super concentrate that could give you faster, more noticeable results. And every order includes your choice of a free gift at checkout. See results for yourself right now. ProviaHair.com/Rome. ProviaHair.com/Rome. These statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or condition.
Over the next 5 years, I want to win too. I want to feel the chill of that trophy again.
I mean, I give the dude credit for positivity, but doesn't it also seem like Russ has never been further detached from reality? The, quote, chill of that trophy?
I want to feel the chill of that trophy again.
My dude, you don't even have the chill of a bench to feel on your ass right now. Like I said, bench the potato. Like I said, how is he going to win two rings without one job? Hey, Russ, worry about landing one gig before you worry about lifting two Lombardis. You won one in your prime with a great team. How are you going to win two past your prime with no team? Even the clones can handle that math. And honestly, the only thing more unbelievable than Seattle absolutely working Denver in arguably the worst deal in league history is what has happened to Russ's career and legacy overall. Like I always say, when it goes, man, it goes fast. But not this fast. About 5 minutes ago, this dude was a bona fide lock for a gold jacket. This was supposedly an all-time great. A Super Bowl champion QB who was a handoff away from being a two-time Super Bowl champion QB. Now he's the dude at the center of the worst trade and the worst contract extension ever. And that jacket may never, ever come out of the closet. Hell, it's hard to even see where his next opportunity is coming from. It's an enormous what now. A what now for Russ, but maybe even a bigger what now for the Broncos. Because now they've got no quarterback, and they've got $85 million in dead cap. Hard to know what they're planning or where they're going next. What we do know is it's not going to be Russet. Anyone but Russet. We also know they do have the 12th overall pick. And we also know what Sean Payton is looking for in a quarterback because he told me so when we sat at Super Bowl outside of the Bellagio looking back at the beautiful fountains.
I think it's important that they're quick processors. Let me give you an example. And this was a strength of Drew's. It's a strength of Mahomes. During any given play in 7 seconds, he's going to point out the mic ID. He's going to send the receiver in motion. He's going to alert the back here for a check down. And he's going to alert Kelsey. It's cover zero. Like, he's a guy that gets in the car. And I'm the opposite now, right? I've got this new car. No, I'm dead serious, though.
No, I know where you're going with this. That's why I'm laughing.
I've got this new car, right? And I know how to turn the radio on. I get to my auto, 72 degrees, whatever that is, and I drive. All right? I never have it in. And these guys
will you don't go through your driving progression?
No, these guys will
heat. Your driving tree?
They'll heat the back seats if you need it. They'll just, they get to the 50 buttons, that are available, heat warmers, seat warmers. I have no idea where my seat warmer is, but I know I have one.
Right.
These guys got to be able to operate quickly in 6 or 7 seconds. It's the hardest thing for us to evaluate.
Well, I actually love the analogy, and I like that it says it's the hardest thing for us to evaluate, except we evaluated that Russ couldn't do it. Russ could not find the seat heaters. Russ did not know how to pop the trunk or the hood or unscrew the gas lid or open the glove box. So he had to go, regardless of the cost. It's just hard to know where he'll go or where exactly the Broncos turn to find a quarterback. We just know that they were not going to have Russ for even one more second. Man, Peyton, George Peyton, he must have a hell of a personality. This must be the best guy ever. Like the greatest guy ever. Like, hey, George, be the godfather to one of my kids. No, be the godfather to all of my kids. That kind of good guy. Essentially, the Broncos are in the parking lot. They're stacking bricks of cash into a pyramid. They're pouring a liquid more combustible than rocket fuel all over it. And they're flicking tiki torches from a safe distance. And then once that fire goes out and the cleaning crew mops it all up, then they run it back. They stack another money pyramid and another one for 5 years. Stack, burn, repeat. Stack, burn, repeat. I'm telling you, if I were Denver, just to be sure, somebody should be tailing George all hours of the day. Do we know for sure he's not some sort of double agent working for Seattle? Have you ever seen him with his shirt off? What if he has Seahawks tattooed on his chest in old English font? What if he's got a 12th man tramp stamp? I'm telling you, before this guy enters the draft war room, I would strip search that guy for Seattle wiretaps. Broncos country, let's ride.
Broncos country, let's ride.
Now what?
Broncos country.
That's a 20-minute way of saying now what?
Broncos country.
Now what?
Let's ride.
Now what? Let's talk for a minute about O'Reilly Auto Parts, because they're in the business of keeping your car on the road and offering helpful service and parts knowledge that you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. And they can also test your battery for free. If it needs to be replaced, they will help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. When you need a specialty tool to finish the job, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and ask about their loaner tool program. Simply pay a refundable deposit and borrow the right tool, then get your deposit back when it's returned. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. We are joined right now by Ron Washington. Ron, it's been a minute. It's great to have you back. How you doing, Ron?
Thank you so much for having me. And it's certainly, as you mentioned, it's been a minute. It's been a long time since I had a conversation with you.
That's the truth, Ron. It has been a long time, but better late than never. And it's great to have you back, and it's great to see you with your own club. In fact, it's a great time of year, Ron, because there's so much hope across the big leagues. How does it feel to be with the Angels and to be learning so much about that new team every single day?
Well, it feels like this is where I should have been. That's how it feels, even though I was out for close to 10 years. It still feels like this is where I should be. And I'm enjoying this opportunity to make something happen in L.A. with the Angels. I'm enjoying the opportunity to help these young men here grow and believe in their abilities to be a champion, because that's what it's about. And as you mentioned earlier, everyone has hope right now, and we are no different.
You know, Ron, to your point about this is where you feel like you should have been, that for the past 10 years you've thought about this. I detailed all your success at the very top, all the success you had managing the Rangers. You know, after you left Texas in 2014, you coached with the A's and the Braves. During that time away as a manager, did you ever go through a period where you thought, man, I know I deserve it, I know I can make the most of it, but I just might not get another shot at managing my own club?
Well, that's negative thinking. And I've never been a negative guy. I always believed that someone out there would give me that opportunity. And to be real, you do have a small thought. It doesn't matter who you are. We're human beings, so we do have a small thought. But, you know, I've always envisioned that it would happen again. And I also envisioned that if it didn't happen again, I'm still making a difference. I have made a difference. And I was in a good place in Atlanta. So, but, you know, Artie Moreno and Perry Manassian and John, they all thought that I was the guy that they wanted to be here and help them to get back to relevance. And that's why I'm here.
And it did happen again.
Back to relevance.
That's it. Excuse me. It did happen again. Angels manager Ron Washington joining us. So you take over an organization that's in part in transition because of the departure of Shohei Ohtani. So what was your message to the club early on in spring training about the possibilities that come with this new chapter?
Oh, accountability. We have to be accountable to everyone. I want 26 leaders. If our roster is 26, I want 26 guys that's leading. 26 guys that's keeping everybody accountable for what their job is. We're trying to develop some structure where every day you come to the ballpark, there's something for you to do to get better. And work ethic is the main thing. It's the norm. The work ethic has to be the norm. And if we put in the time and understand what the game is asking us to do, we will be okay. Trying to get our young pitchers to understand, just pound the strike zone, keep the ball in play. And it's not something that we are just saying. It's something that we are trying to make an act on with our young pitchers. And so far this spring training, they have done it. Now we got to continue in that direction because you need pitching and you have to play defense. And if you can do those two things with consistency every night, you got a chance to be in the ball game. It doesn't matter the personnel.
Angels manager.
Those are things we're talking about.
Ron Washington joining us. I was going to say, especially on the back end of that bullpen, they revamped the bullpen. You've got a lot of arms back there. That's got to make you feel good. What about the game has changed dramatically, right? But you still have one of the best players of his generation and a first-ballot Hall of Famer, Mike Trout. You know him well because you faced him as a divisional opponent of the Rangers, and you've seen him before. So, obviously, he confirmed in recent weeks that this is where he wants to be, that he feels even more motivation now to win a championship. How much do you value that level of buy-in from the face of the franchise?
It's paramount. I mean, we can't do anything without Mike, and I want him to feel that. We can't do anything without him. And so his focus right now and his intent is 100% sold on the Los Angeles Angels. And because his intent is 100% sold, everyone else has to be 100% sold. And that's where it starts. And as I told him, he don't have to do it by himself. I just want him to lead through his performance and lead with his presence. And when he's not performing, his presence is just as important as his production. And if we can just keep that mindset with him, we're going to be fine. And along with that, I've gave him carte blanche to play baseball the way he played baseball. Our conversations over the winter was, you know, he wasn't playing the game the way he wanted to play it because there was too much concern about being injured. Well, when you think like that, you do get injured. And he told me he just wanted to get back to playing baseball. And I said, well, you got carte blanche to do that. And we, together, will decide when it's time for you to take a break.
We are talking to Ron Washington. You know, it's going to make him feel so good knowing that that's not in the back of his mind. Hey, Ron, I'm curious. You played 10 years in the bigs. Do you remember your first spring training as a player back in the day? What do you remember about that day or that first spring training?
Well, what I remember is the meal money.
How much?
I just came.
I hate how much, guy, but how much?
At that time, it was probably an envelope with about $480 in it.
Ooh, all right.
Now, you see, and I remember that because I've never gotten that down in the minor leagues, not even close. But at the time, $480 was a lot of money. So I remember the meal money. And then the rest of it, I never concerned myself about because I was a gamer. And I went up in there, and I learned how to be a professional baseball player through the Dodgers, Dusty Baker, Reggie Smith, David Lopes, Ron Say, Steve Garvey, those guys. So those are the guys that taught me how to be a pro. So when I finally got into, my first spring training, I was ready to go. I was ready to go. And I was wide-eyed. I was listening to everything. I was learning as much as I could. I never thought I knew it. And one thing about those guys, they always told you, in no uncertain terms, you're in here to learn and listen and not take money out of our pocket.
And, Ron, you know, since I'm an L.A. native, I've always said this, and my listeners know this. My idol growing up, my childhood idol, was the Penguin, Ron Say. I love the Penguin. I still love the Penguin. I've had nothing but great, great experiences with the Penguin. That aside, I just want to say that. That was my guy. I'll tell you a guy you did not mess with, Reggie Smith. My man was serious, right? That was a pro. He was serious.
He told me one time he know karate. I was being smart, and he told me, you don't know, but I know karate. And I never said this around Reggie, and I'm about to put it out there. When he walked out that room after he told us, Jeff Leonard and I, that he know karate, Jeff Leonard and I look at each other and say, we know crazy.
Dude. 50 years later, you can tell that story, Ron.
Yes, and you know, you just didn't mess with those guys. Those guys was, they was locked in about the game of baseball. And any young kid that came there, you knew that right away. So I was taught well.
You were taught well, and I know you're passing those lessons along. And when you, I'm sorry, but when you mentioned Jeffrey Leonard, the first thing that comes to my mind is him going around the bases flap down. What a great, great moment that was.
Yes, it was. We came up together in the minor leagues, and he was always that guy looking for something to separate him from everyone else. And he went on and had him a tremendous career. We roomed together for about 5 or 6 straight years, and we always talk baseball, which I'm trying to get these young kids here to understand, to do with one another. We talked the game. We had fights, not fist fights, but, you know, back and forth. And then all of a sudden we go out on the field and we'll see who is right and who is wrong. The game always showed you that. But these kids today, they don't challenge each other mentally. And sometimes that's why they get lost in the shuffle. It's not the physical part of it. It's the strength of the mind that comes into play that separates you.
Well, there's no doubt, Ron, you still have that. You still have that. And now you got yourself a team and a new opportunity. And I can tell how juiced you are for that. He is the manager of the Angels. He's in his first season there. And obviously the credentials come before and speak for themselves. Ron, it's been a minute. It is great to hear the energy. It's great to hear your voice. And I know we'll do it again this season. Great to have you back, Ron. Thank you very much.
Please, please have me back. I enjoy talking baseball with you. I know you're so knowledgeable about many things, but I certainly enjoy talking baseball.
You know it,
you.
Skip.
So please,
you
please,
know it, Ron.
Please.
You have my word. I can't wait. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Do not make a shake or eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried-out, tough beef in a bag? No one. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper is the real deal, and it comes in 4 amazing flavors. Old Fashioned is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who like to take things up a notch. Next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares Old Trapper with your beef. Dak Prescott. Whack. It's
That's
insane,
whack.
Right? It's impossible, right? I mean, yes, it is insane, but it's not impossible. Far from it. In fact, 60 mil per for Dak Prescott looks actually likely at this point. First of all, you do realize he's already making 40 mil per. I'm not sure everybody understands that. I know that you may not know that or believe that based on his actual play, but his actual pay is 40 mil. You might say, come on, dude, that is not a $40 million a year quarterback. Well, yes, he is. And so is Daniel Jones. So anyway, before you say that 60 is insane, understand that he already makes 40. The bigger point here, though, is the cap hit for this season. It's already 59.5 mil. And the best way for Dallas to figure out how to spread that cap hit out is to give Dak a new contract. Hence the discussion. And that new contract is almost certain to reset the quarterback market. Now, they could let him play it out at that money and then let him go. But when was the last time Jerry Jones let a quarterback, a franchise quarterback, if you want to argue that he's that, walk out the door? When? Never. So Dak's got a hammer. Dak's got some major leverage over the old man. And that means that his new deal, if he gets it, is likely to be more than at least 55 mil per year, and maybe even as much as 60 mil per year. He could be looking at 60 mil a year, which is probably why Dak showed up in front of some cameras and some microphones yesterday, sounding so confident, feeling himself, sounding like a guy who already knows that he's about to make 60 mil per year.
Yeah, I'm definitely confident. Obviously, it helps the team. It's important for the numbers. I've heard Jerry said that. Kind of happened over here and told me that part, right? That that is a process. Both sides understand that. Everything's great. And it'll happen.
So notice he started off by saying it helps the team. That new deal, my new deal. If I get that new deal, it's going to help the team. His new market setting quarterback contract that could pay him upwards of 60 mil is going to help the team. Sure, it's not. Paying Wack more than any other quarterback in the league helps the team about as much as setting that money on fire. I mean, yes, there are cap considerations like I laid out. I understand that. But damn, Dak, pretty confident take at a pretty strange time. You don't sound like a quarterback who was just badly outplayed in his own house by a dude starting his first career playoff game. You don't sound like a quarterback who has never sniffed an NFC championship appearance, much less a Super Bowl. You sound like a quarterback who thinks that everything is going just great and that anybody criticizing the culture in Dallas is attacking you personally. In fact, it doesn't just sound like you think all that. You actually said all that. This was his response to the idea that some might, i.e., by some might, I mean pretty much everybody, is questioning the Cowboys' culture.
My point is, yeah, that's something I've always bragged on and took pride in. So if there's questionings of that, concerns in that, I feel attacked. I'm sure some guys in the locker room do. But at the end of the day, it's a business. And the way that this business plays out, people don't get exactly what they wanted. There's always sourness, I guess you can say, somewhere. And so, yeah, I don't want to make anything bigger than what already comments have had.
My man, I have a question. The hell are you even talking about? You feel attacked. And you're sure there are some guys in that locker room that feel attacked. Good. That's what's supposed to happen when you get absolutely obliterated at home by a huge underdog in the playoffs when it's all set up for you and it's supposed to be your year.
I feel attacked.
Right. Exactly. You're not supposed to get big pats on the back and the biggest contract in the league after that happens. This notion of there's always sourness, his word, not mine. There's always sourness somewhere. Right.
There's always sourness, I guess.
Right. You know when there's always sourness? When you gag and crumble and collapse and tank in the playoffs every single year. Pretty sure you'll always find sourness around that. There's going to be sourness, and there should be. I know you work hard on that culture. Except it's a culture of gagging. It's a culture of underachieving. No one's going to pat you on the back for that. Of course you're going to get attacked for that. Like, how in the world is this dude turning this around on us? Like, we're the ones being unreasonable. Like, he's being unfairly attacked. Like, the team is being unfairly attacked. Like, their culture is being unfairly attacked. My man, if it's not a culture problem, and if the culture is impeccable and unassailable, and anybody questioning it is attacking you, then what the hell is your problem? What the hell is that team's problem? Because there definitely is a problem. Because you underachieved yet again, and in one of the worst ways ever. You always underachieve. The team always underachieves, considering the team hasn't won a damn thing in 3 decades. All we ever hear is how great this team is. All we ever hear is this team is a legitimate contender. All we ever hear is this is the year. And it never, ever happens. And then when somebody questions your culture, you feel like you're being attacked. They talk like contenders.
I feel attacked.
He gets paid like a contender. He sounds like a guy who should be making $60 million a year. He just doesn't play like a guy who should be making $60 million a year. He sounds like a guy who's accomplished a lot, who really hasn't accomplished all that much. He's a good player. He's a good player. Let me tell you something. Brock Purdy doesn't even make $1 million a year. He's already played in a Super Bowl. No, scratch that. He's coming back from a shredded elbow to play in a Super Bowl. No, scratch that. He's coming back from a shredded elbow in the NFC Championship game to play in a Super Bowl. A couple of things that Dak's never done. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to sit here and say to me, yeah, well, he's got talent all around him. What, and the Cowboys don't? Dak doesn't? They're a contender every single year. Every single year we hear, this is their year. Has he done any of that? Any part of that? No. Yet he's predicted to make more than 60 times what Brock is slated to make next season. Here's my point. Fine. Make the 60 mil. My issue is not the money. My issue is not the money. And yeah, I know. I'm famous for saying whenever somebody says it's not about the money, it's about one thing, the money. I don't have a problem with that. It's always been about timing and leverage. And Dak's got both those things working for him right now. My problem with Dak is saying anybody who questions our culture, you know, that feels like a personal attack. Good.
Attacked.
Y'all got problems. Y'all just got beat down at home by Green Bay, by a quarterback playing in his first playoff game. But you feel attacked. Man, that's rich. That's almost as rich as you're about to be. Thanks to Jarrah's amazing front office management. And remember, Jarrah is all in this year. He is.
I would anticipate, with looking ahead at our key contracts that we'd like to address, we'll be all in. I would anticipate we'll be all in at the end of this year.
Whatever the hell that means. If you're going to be all in this year, what the hell have you been doing all these other years? Even if nobody knows what that means, not even Dak. Not even Dak.
Jerry says all in. What does that mean to you as far as next year?
When he says all in on next year?
Yeah. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that one. Okay. Yeah, I'm excited to see it, honestly. I don't know. I can't say I've had talks with him about what is all in and how you plan on making those moves. So, but... yeah, let's see. I'm excited for it.
Even he doesn't know what that means. The reason he doesn't know what that means is, what does anything mean that it ever comes flying out of Jarrah Attrick's mouth? Almost nothing. Hey, Dak, you know what all in means? Spoiler alert. It means you're going to win 11 or 12 or even 13. You're going to get a really good seed. Everybody's going to pump you the hell up and hype you and say, this is finally the year. Then you'll get to the postseason, and y'all will fall on your faces all over again and blow it. That's what it means when Jarrah says we're going to be all in this year. Because that's how every Cowboys season ends. And that's why people question the Cowboy culture. And the reason you feel attacked is because you are getting attacked.
I feel attacked.
And understandably so. How do you act like you didn't just get beaten down by the Packers in your own house on a year when anything short of getting to the championship game was going to be an epic failure? And yet you did it again. Yet you feel attacked. You know what Dak is? Dak's getting attacked. Tack, 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 tack. But you ought to know by now, Dak. You ought to know by now. You lose to Green Bay at home in a year where you can't lose. You're going to get attacked. And it's going to keep happening. And it's going to feel like you're being attacked, 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 attacked,
attacked, attacked, attacked, attacked, attacked, attacked, attacked, attacked, attacked, attacked, attacked,
if you feel like you're being attacked right now, wait until they do bump you up to 60. Then you're really going to feel like you're getting attacked. Tack, 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 tack. Wait till there's a 6 in front of it. Tack, 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 tack. That's whack. Cowboys are something else. That is whack. That is something else. You know who's got the greatest composure ever? Brock Purdy. The guy makes under $1 million a year. Been to a Super Bowl, nearly won. Been to an NFC Championship game, shredded his elbow. Came back the following year from that and went to the Super Bowl. And he's making under a mil. Under a mil. Dak is going to make 60 times that, apparently. Yet he feels attacked. Man, I wish I felt attacked. That attacked. Tack, 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 tack. I wish somebody would tack, 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 me.
Tack, 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 tack.
My man. So, let me tell you about something. The other day, I come across a product that all of us should be carrying around. It's amazing. It's something different for fresh breath. It is an incredible product called Zelman's Minty Mouth. And guys, it is a game changer. If you're up in the grill of somebody else and you're making your case for whatever it is, make sure your breath is fresh. Zelman's cleans your breath in a way that other mints don't and can't, because it's not just a mint. It's a functional breath freshener capsule that you swallow. It's clinically tested against the toughest offenders, even garlic and onions. You just pop 2 or 3 in your mouth, suck the minty coating, then swallow the capsule for the confidence of fresh, clean breath that lasts for hours. The product is nothing. The product is like nothing else you've ever tried. It fights bad breath in your mouth. It then goes right down to your gut. This is the ultimate hack to get rid of coffee, garlic, or smoker's breath. You're going to like having the confidence of long-lasting fresh breath, or you get your money back guaranteed. These folks will give you your money back. Not that you're going to want it, but they will. They've got free shipping if you order 3 packs or more, and trust me, you're going to want more. And nobody likes to pay for shipping. Go to Zelmans.com right now. That's Zelmins.com. Right now, you'll get 15% off when you use the promo code ROME. Zelmins.com. You do have to use the code ROME to get your 15% savings, ROME. We are joined by Lamont Paris. Lamont, what's good? Great to have you on the program. Yeah. How are you?
Hi. How you doing, my man? All good here.
Good, dude. It's got to be. It's got to be. It's great to have you on. Listen, with respect to what's still in front of you, you're already one of the best stories in all college basketball, having gone from 11 wins last season in your first year into competing for the SEC championship this year. When, Lamont, did you first realize, man, this group could be really special?
Yeah. You know, we had once every 4 years, the NCAA lets you go to a foreign tour, they call it, and you can play a couple of games. You get 10 practices leading up into it. And so we were here all summer, and, you know, I knew we had an older group. That just really had more to do with the day they were born and how many years they had played. But then when we got here, they played so well together. They shared the ball. They liked each other, and they were competitive guys. So at that point, I knew our chances to be significantly better were way, way, way high. So, you never know what it looks like in terms of wins and losses. But I knew we were going to be competitive and be able to compete in the vast majority of the games that we played this year. And honestly, I could tell that in the summer.
All right, so speaking of the summer, you went to the Bahamas Invitational in July, right? So what did they show you both on and off the floor that stayed with you from that trip that maybe you didn't already know?
Yeah, it's funny. You go on those trips, and the players think it's all about the basketball and what the games, the final score of the games is and all that. But the coaches know it's about all the other stuff. So, I mean, from a basketball perspective, our ball movement, and we're playing foreign tour teams, and so it's a shorter clock and a lot more possessions, and just our ball movement was unbelievable. Just the way guys were giving it up, moving, it was popping. That was one thing that you never knew how that was really going to look, but that was one thing they showed. And then off the court, we gave them one day where they didn't have to do anything. There was no team meal. They didn't have to show up for a breakfast. There was nothing. And all they did was spend the whole day with each other. And so I thought that was really indicative as to what this team was. And that stuff shows up in the games for us, the fact that they enjoy being around each other. They enjoy working with each other and just generally like each other.
Hey, Lamont, how much is that? I mean, that you say that, and I think that goes over a lot of people's heads. How critical is that? I mean, you've been around teams, right, where that's not the case. How important a thing is that? And what's that like compared to guys that, frankly, don't want to hang out?
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, if you don't have that, it doesn't preclude you from being good. It doesn't. But it's a crapshoot. I'm telling you, you're really fortunate if you have bad chemistry on your team and you have a good year. And not only a good year, let's stop talking about wins and losses. What kind of year do you have relative to what your ceiling is? Because every team's got a ceiling based on the personnel they have, how talented this is, how deep they are, right? And you're either going to come really close to that, you're going to exceed that, or you're not going to come anywhere near. And oftentimes, I'd say the vast majority of times, that depends on how these guys like each other and how they like playing together. And obviously, if I had to say, this is a team that has exceeded their ceiling.
They
continue to do that.
Really interesting. Lamont Paris joining us. I'm curious, what was it like early in the year? Because, for instance, you were picked to finish last in the SEC preseason media poll. You knew better. You knew better because clearly you knew more about your team than anybody on the outside did. However, what was it like early in the season before teams knew what you all were all about? And then you'd show up and you'd punch them in the face. What was their reaction like when they realized, man, these are not the same guys that we saw last year?
Yeah, no, it was a lot of proving that was going on, and we used that. I said even after the conference meeting that I said the only good thing, I mean, I knew we weren't a last place team, right? But I said the only good thing is that they didn't pick us second to last. They picked us dead last. So now I can put that on the billboard and I can use that to motivate my guys. And trust me, we did that the whole season. We were constantly trying to prove ourselves, even in some non-conference games where, we had a lot of new faces and you're putting together and you beat a team that maybe people think you should win by 20 and you beat them by 7. And there's still the jury's still out. And you come into the league and you're 12-1 coming into the conference play and they still don't believe, right? And then you go 5-2 with wins at Kentucky versus Kentucky at home, who's 6th in the country. At Tennessee, who's 5th in the country, and neither of those two teams, they never lose at Tennessee, right? And then they still don't believe. You're still not in the top 25. So there's all that we can still fuel our guys with. And at some point, and maybe it's not until we stand on a ladder and cut the nets down, if we're fortunate enough for that to happen, at some point, someone has to say, wow, these guys are pretty freaking good. And so we still play that up I got a clip on here now where they're talking about that we're not a top tier SEC team and shouldn't be competing for the championship. So we will continue to play that up with our guys.
Lamont Paris joining us. You don't have a clip of me saying that, nor will you. You use the word fuel, man. Your dudes are running on premium rocket fuel. You got to be like, good, good. Keep doubting us. But Lamont, the fact is, And the reason I'm not saying it is you're a winner. You're a winner. You led Chattanooga to 27 wins and a trip to the NCAA tournament 2 years ago. You've worked with some highly respected coaches like Bo Ryan when you were an assistant with Wisconsin from 2010 to 17 on Wisconsin, by the way. Bo was a mainstay in the tourney. Bo was a mainstay on this show for years. What was he like to work for, and what are your biggest takeaways from your time with Bo?
Yeah, well, he's great. He's a character. Like he's almost like a literal cartoon character at times. Just a funny guy. He's got a million stories. I've heard most all of them two times, but he was great to be around, great to work with, and he cared a lot about the guys. And he was a teacher first. That was the thing that I took away more than anything. It was not some fancy play that he had, but he knew how to inspire guys, motivate guys. And teach guys the way that they could be successful. And so, that's probably what I've taken most of it. But, he's on the ballot for the Naismith Hall of Fame, I think, right now. And so hopefully if anyone out there listening gets that done, it's probably long overdue. But he was great to be around, great to work with and work for. And we still stay connected really regularly today.
I like hearing that. South Carolina head coach Lamont Paris joining us. Needless to say, because of the success you're having, and anybody hearing this conversation would know it, you're being connected to some high-profile coaching openings. I understand that's outside noise. I understand you and your coaching staff know how to tune that out. But is it something that you address with your players if and when they see it? Because they do on social media. How do you handle that with them?
Yeah, that's a great question. We haven't really addressed anything like that. I make light of some of the stuff just because, people are going to say that this player's in the mock draft that we have, or this guy should be doing this, or like you said, it's just outside noise. I've heard from a lot of our players' parents and family members, but it's just one more thing that you have to navigate that makes this job in 2024. It gets more difficult by the day, and that kind of stuff. Like, no one's heard me say anything about my name connected to other jobs. No one's ever heard me say anything about another job. But people have to write a story, and they want to be the first one that connects my name to this, or your name to the presidency, Jim. I don't know, whatever they want to do. So it's challenging, but we do have a mature group. They know I'm in this thing to win this thing. So I don't think they have any doubts about that. And we're so locked into this moment right now and what we're doing and what we're achieving. And we're not satisfied, and we want to try to finish it off the best way we humanly possibly can.
Hey, Lamont, I'm laughing because somebody actually did connect my name to the presidency. It was one of my knucklehead callers, but yeah, it happened. So that made me laugh. You talk about being locked in. Before you go, you've got that marquee matchup tomorrow, number 4 Tennessee coming to Columbia. Yeah. When I spoke to Vols head coach Rick Barnes last month, he told me that Dalton Knecht was one of the best pure scorers that he's ever coached. He went for 31 when you guys beat them in Knoxville in January. What's it going to take defensively tomorrow to sweep that season series from Tennessee?
Yeah. I mean, you got to do a good job on him, I think. At the same time, I think a big part of it was that Zakai Ziegler only had 2 points. Adu, who's a really good player, did not get loose. So, you want to have certain things that you want to do against a prolific scorer like Connect. But at the same time, I don't think you can gear everything. There's a world in which they can score 80 points and Dalton Connect can only score 7. That world really exists. There's also a world where he can score 30 and they end up with 59, which is what happened in our last game, right? I think we have to try to make him a volume scorer. If he's really efficient, right, if he goes 31 on 14 shots, we're probably in trouble. If he goes 31 on 24 shots, 25 shots, I think it was in that game, I think we have a better chance. So you just got to try to make his shots challenging. He's going to make them. Right, you can't overreact. He's going to make some tough ones. That's what prolific guys do. And then I think you got to do a really good job on the other guys and limit second chance opportunities, transition type stuff, all the stuff that you have a little say so on how that plays out.
So Lamont, one last thing: there's also a world where you have a team that's having the year it's having right now, and you don't have one guy averaging over 14 points per game, which I find really interesting. Your leading scorer, Michi Johnson, can absolutely elevate his play though when you need him to. For instance, he scored 21 of his 25 in the second half of your comeback win over Florida on Saturday. What has he brought to the program since he transferred in from Ohio State?
Yeah, no, it's nice to have a guy that can be explosive. Trust me. You know, you're playing against a really tough defense like Tennessee or Florida. It was in that game. And so we got a way that we play, and we got a lot of guys that are capable. Plenty of guys. We got a number of guys that have scored over 20 points in one game. But it is nice in the moments when a guy feels the moment and he wants to rise to an occasion that he can explode. And he does so much for us. I mean, he's been a good assist to turnover guy for us. You know, he can open the game up with how he shoots, but also just as much as what he does in two other areas. One, as an on-ball defender, he's been really good in that regard. And then also getting into the paint and creating stuff for other guys. So it's nice to, even on the games where he doesn't score, he had a stretch where he wasn't scoring a lot, but he had in consecutive games, I think it was 5, 6, and 8 assists in 3 straight games. And so to know that when your shot's not falling or the defense is geared towards stopping you or whatever that is, to still find a way to impact winning at this level, I think that says a lot about who you are as a player, and certainly Michi Johnson has done that for us.
Dude, and as a human being, like, you're not hanging your head. You're like, all right, it's not going down. I can still help us in many other ways. Man, that's a selfless player. That's a leader right there. That's a guy leading from the front. That's awesome. He is the head basketball coach at South Carolina. Excuse me, Lamont. Great to have you on. Listen, what a great conversation. Really appreciate the energy. Really appreciate you making time. I know you got a big one coming up tomorrow. Good luck with that, and I'm really curious to see how things go the rest of the way. Great to come together, man. Thanks so much.
No problem. Appreciate the time and the love. Thanks, Jim. Have me back anytime.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back, and I'll take you up on that. Lamont Paris.
Good night now!